Peter B. Collins News and Comment. It's Thursday, January 19th, 2017. The final hours of the Obama administration. The allegation that fake news was one of the components used by Russian intelligence to manipulate the American election has gained some traction in this country. And I don't believe it in any significant way. I'm sure that there were Russian operatives who were happily inserting false messages into social media and into the corporate media in this country. I don't deny that that's possible. But we have so many examples of Americans doing this. Americans who tried to flip the election in favor of Trump by using these Republican-enacted voter suppression tactics. Well, Scott Shane of the New York Times has been a guest on this program a couple of times. I respect him as a journalist, and I've criticized him recently because his byline has appeared on the misleading articles in the New York Times that stoke what I consider to be unproven allegations of Russian interference in our election. And we mentioned Scott Shane yesterday when we quoted the veteran intelligence professionals and their objections. That was a couple of days ago, I'm sorry. That in his article where he asserts what is assessed by the CIA and the FBI and the NSA, when you get to the inside jump of the story, you find that he acknowledges that there's no evidence for it. Well, today I praise Scott Shane because he used good old enterprise reporting. And he tracked down 23-year-old Cameron Harris, a recent college graduate who lives in Maryland. And he needed cash to pay down his student loans, so he started writing fake news. He paid $5 for the URL of a website that represents a fake newspaper. It's called ChristianTimesNewspaper.com. Now, I'm one of at least 6 million people who saw his posts passed around on Facebook starting in October. And I actually reported it on the podcast. I said, this is bullshit. And the allegation published by the ChristianTimesNewspaper.com was that Hillary Clinton's people had stacked up boxes and boxes of ballots in Ohio. They're in a warehouse. And on election day, these boxes of ballots are going to be fed in with the real ballots, and that's how she was going to rig the election. So this guy Harris, tracked down by Scott Shane, appeared to be a little reluctant at first to admit what he had done. But after agreeing to tell the story, he described it as a very part-time gig. He made about $1,000 an hour in web advertising revenue, and he just sat down and made this stuff up. So in September, he said, well, gosh, who would have found these fraudulent Clinton ballots? So I think he may have been thinking of Joe the Plumber, but he came up with a guy named Randall Prince, totally fake, a Columbus area electrical worker. This everyman, a Trump supporter, that's how he was described, had entered a little used back room at the warehouse and stumbled upon stacked boxes of ballots pre-marked for Hillary Clinton. And then, because he thought it would be good to support his fake story with a photograph, he went online to Google Image, and he found ballot boxes from an election in Birmingham, England. And he used that picture, and there's a guy, a bald guy, standing next to a box of ballots, and he just, made this up. He wrote down, Mr. Prince, shown here, poses with his find as election officials investigate. So this was a very successful effort. Overall, the 6 million views combined with other fake news that he wrote earned him a total of $22,000. He estimates that $5,000 of that came from the Hillary ballot box fake story alone. And he said he needed the money for student loans, car payments, and rent. So my point here is that you don't have to go to Russia. You don't have to demonize Putin. You don't have to, believe these unproven accounts from our government that Russia manipulated the election. We had Americans actively doing it, and we haven't even mentioned the propaganda and disinformation operations run by the major political campaigns and their dark money super PACs. And tomorrow, I'm going to share my views on the Hillary or bust voters and the Democratic officials, including superdelegates, who made the bad bet on Hillary Clinton. Meanwhile, the Democrats are wrangling over who will chair the Democratic National Committee, and last night, seven candidates met in Washington, D.C. for a kind of a debate at George Washington University. And my favorite candidate is Keith Ellison, the congressman from Minnesota, the only Muslim who is in the House, and a real progressive, and a guy who is honest. I've interviewed him many times and gotten to know Keith a little bit, and I trust him. The other people running include Tom Perez, the outgoing Secretary of Labor from the Clinton, the Obama administration. He is the choice of the party establishment. And the Renegades are New Hampshire Party Chairman Ray Buckley. I got a Facebook ad from him yesterday, and I'd never heard of him. South Carolina Democratic Party Chairman Jaime Harrison, former Fox News analyst Jamu Green, Idaho Democratic Party executive Sally Boynton Brown, and the mayor of South Bend, Indiana, a gay veteran named Pete Buttigieg. Sorry about that. So we'll see how it all plays out. But there have been efforts to smear Keith Ellison, and we'll see if those are ultimately effective. Here in California, our senior senator, Dianne Feinstein, is in fact the most senior member of the United States Senate. She's currently 83. And she has dropped a big hint that she is planning to run for re-election in 2018. We need to get the message to Dianne that it's time for her to go. It's time for new faces in the Democratic Party. And I will always applaud Feinstein for fighting to get the torture report completed and released. But beyond that, she's been an apologist for the worst of the Washington errors of the last 15 years. And it's time for her to enjoy some time in retirement. Trump arrived in Washington today, and every move is being covered by the corporate media. I will not attempt to duplicate that. But the real whopper that he used, he went to his hotel and held a meeting. And before he kicked the press out, he said, "We have by far the highest IQ of any cabinet ever assembled." And then he praised his own intelligence. Donald, people who are smart don't have to do that. He has reiterated that he does plan to move the U.S. Embassy from Jerusalem, to Jerusalem from Tel Aviv. There are issues because the Jerusalem building that the U.S. has isn't big enough for an embassy, but the Donald says he is still committed to that. George H.W. Bush and his wife, Barbara, have the best excuse for not attending the inauguration tomorrow. Poppy's in the hospital with pneumonia, and Barbara is also hospitalized with a cough, and they're trying to make sure, I guess, she doesn't get the pneumonia. They weren't planning to attend anyway, but I like the way I set that up. And Chuck Schumer is making it clear that despite all the noise, and there have been some great attacks on Republican nominees to the wrecking crew, that's Trump's cabinet, he is signaling that as early as Friday afternoon, following the inauguration, that the Secretary of Defense, Mad Dog Mattis, and the Director of Homeland Security, John Kelly, a general, will be confirmed by the Senate. They're described as non-controversial nominees. At this point, I do not see that the Democrats will succeed in blocking a single nominee of Donald Trump. And that does not bode well for the upcoming Supreme Court nomination battle. Rick Perry has decided that he was wrong when he said that he was going to shut down the Energy Department when he was running for president. That is, if he could remember the name of the department he was planning to shut down. He now says, now that he knows what the agency does, that he's really excited about running it. The confirmation process has been extremely informative and beneficial for me, he said. Because he didn't know what the Energy Department does. He thought he was going to be an international ambassador for the oil and gas industry. The Energy Department should be shut down, in my opinion, and its function should be merged into the Defense Department where they belong. The bulk of the work of the Energy Department relates to our nuclear arsenal, and not to domestic energy concerns of any kind. And by the way, Rick Perry has rethought his position on climate change and has one of those nuanced statements about how, yeah, it's real, but we just don't know to what extent. The real grilling has been reserved for Steven Mnuchin, the millionaire, perhaps billionaire, who's nominated for Trump's secretary. He's an alumni of Goldman Sachs. He ran the foreclosure operation at One West, a troubled bank here in California, after the mortgage meltdown. And Steven Mnuchin forgot to report about $100 million of assets that he owns. You know, when you got that much, it's easy to, you know, $100 million here, $100 million there. And also, the chair of the confirmation hearing has prevented the victims of One West Mortgage from testifying against Mr. Mnuchin. So Elizabeth Warren held a conference where she invited these people to offer their stories, and some of them are really harrowing and downright cruel. In addition, Mnuchin was held to account by members of the Democratic caucus in the Senate about offshore tax havens in the Cayman Islands. And Mnuchin says that he did advise clients at Goldman Sachs to use offshore tax dodges. But he said, I did not use the Cayman Islands in any way to avoid paying taxes for myself. And then he said that he would support any closure of the loopholes that allow his clients to continue to do that. Isn't that special? Thanks for joining me today for my News and Comment podcast. You're free to share this far and wide with absolutely anyone. It's available on YouTube. And I remain Peter B. Collins.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.